Welcome inside Appalachia. I'm Cecilia Mason. There are some innovative ideas in Pennsylvania for cleaning acid mine drainage.
In this particular tank, we're raising brown trout.
We revisit the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame induction ceremony.
So all of my people came from old-time mountain music. It was all good fiddle players and good band players and good dancers.
Some resilient West Virginia land is saved from development.
For some of us anyway, we want to see that piece of property as it is so that we can, you know, at night we can think, you know, that's the way it's going to be forever.
And way out in West Virginia goes mobile.
So they could be traveling around the state and just link right into the website for something they've read about in the book.
These stories and more coming up this week on Inside Appalachia. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Cecilia Mason. Abandoned mines leached metals and other pollutants into Pennsylvania's streams. Could fracking be one way to clean up this water? Reed Frazier of the Allegheny Front reports.
Bill Sabatas stands in a small industrial building. He's on a platform next to what looks like a big hot tub filled with really dirty water.
We're aerating it. We're trying to oxidize the iron, so you can see how blood red it's getting.
The liquid is abandoned mine drainage, or AMD. This AMD came from a mine just up the hill. Sabatas has spent much of his life cleaning up this dirty water. He's president of the Toby Creek Watershed Association, a local group that built and now runs this facility in northwestern Pennsylvania. The facility passes the AMD through a series of treatments. At the end of the line, it flows into a tank the size of an above-ground pool. The water here is clear.
In this particular tank, we're raising brown trout. And a lot of people just love to come up here and look at them. I guess it memorizes them. They just look like a big aquarium.
The fish will be used to stock streams around the state. The clean water in the tank eventually runs into the Brandy Camp Creek, a tributary to the Allegheny River. Sabatas grew up here, near the town of Brockway. The region has a long mining history. The streams all used to be the color of rust.
There wasn't a fish in 100 miles of this place, so it was pretty bad.
Since the group built this treatment plant in 2005 with a state grant, the Brandy Camp started getting cleaner. But there was a problem. The watershed group had no idea how it would pay to keep the plant running.
It was scary because we didn't have a plan.
Then around 5 years ago, a potential solution emerged. Fracking. Drillers use millions of gallons of water, along with sand and chemicals, to frack natural gas out of underground rock formations. Frackers typically use fresh water. But a few companies approached Sabatas with an idea. Could they use his cleaned-up mine water?
Well, I thought, well, there's all this water, and I need more money to treat all of it. And I thought, well, you know, they were looking for water. I said, try it. And they tried it.
And it worked. The gas companies paid Sabatas' group for the water, although technically it's a donation. And with the money, the group could treat more abandoned mine drainage. This idea of using old mine water to frack is picking up steam in Pennsylvania. Regulators, faced with a $15 billion abandoned mine problem, want to see more of this. They see it as one way to get AMD out of streams by putting it into fracked wells. Some companies have already started doing it, but others are balking. Andrew Patterson of the Marcellus Shale Coalition says the issue is liability.
The you touch it, you own it concept.
He says drillers are worried that they'd be held liable for the condition of the abandoned mine in perpetuity, even if they only use the water for a few months.
It's not clear on either a state or federal basis that if you were to use that water, that by using it, you had not inherited the long-term treatment of that source of water.
Watershed groups like Sabatas's don't have to worry about this. State law protects them from lawsuits over the mine water they treat because they're considered good Samaritans. A bill being pushed by the gas industry and the state's Department of Environmental Protection would add gas companies to that list of good Samaritans.
Well, we see this as a lose-lose-lose.
Tracy Carluccio is with Delaware Riverkeeper, an environmental group. She says gas companies are not good Samaritans. Under the bill, companies wouldn't have to clean up the mine water or buy it from groups like Sabotages. They could simply withdraw the water they need from a polluted mine.
They're not cleaning it up. They're simply taking very polluted fluids and making them more polluted.
But some see this as a way to peck away at the state's historic abandoned mine water problem. Radoslav Vidic is an engineer at the University of Pittsburgh. He says allowing frackers to use mine water keeps that water from polluting the rivers.
If you think about it, AMD is already killing the fish in the streams. If you take it out and prevent it from going into the streams, or you clean it up before it goes into the streams, you can only make it better.
Even if the bill passes, no one's promising that fracking could solve the state's abandoned mine water problems. At current funding levels, cleanup of the thousands of historic coal mines in Pennsylvania is projected to take up to 50 years. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
Orange-colored streams have been commonplace for decades across the coal fields of Appalachia. As the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports, one innovative project is bringing together watershed advocates, regulators, and a mining company.
As a tomboy growing up in the 1980s, Melissa Reckner remembers crawling in the waterways near her home in Halsapel in Somerset County.
I very distinctly remember getting, now I know it's iron, I didn't know that's what the orange stuff was then, but getting that and black goo under my fingernails, and unfortunately that was probably sewage. We're kids, we didn't know any better.
But one small stream behind her house ran clean. There were crayfish and other life. So she wondered about the dead orange-colored water and black goo.
You know, my mom said it's just a bigger problem. And as one person, you didn't feel you could do anything about it.
Today, Reckner is director of the Kiski-Conemaugh Stream Team, a watershed group in Somerset County. And along with many other people, she is trying to do something about the 5,500 miles of polluted streams in Pennsylvania. The problem largely comes from abandoned coal mines. When water moves through a mine, it picks up heavy metals and becomes acidic. That acid mine drainage, known as AMD, creates the orange coloring in the streams and rivers. You might expect the companies that created the problems to be responsible for cleanup, but John Stefanko says that's not the case. He's deputy director for mine operations with the Department of Environmental Protection.
Basically, companies would come in, they would mine the coal, they would earn their profits, then they would just disappear. And then there was no program in place that would provide assurances that if they did cause a pollutional problem, that there would be monies to correct the problem or prevent the problem.
There's still coal deep in some of those mines, but the laws to access it are stronger now. Stefanko says about 5 years ago, Rosebud Mining requested access to an old abandoned mine near a small stream called Topper Run. In order to get to the 10,000 acres of coal reserves, Rosebud had to clean up some of the acid mine drainage caused by its predecessors. So the company offered to build a water treatment plant, something Stefanko says the state could not afford to do.
They were willing to basically build a facility, a $15 million facility. They will operate and maintain that facility for about 30 years, which is roughly the life of the mining operation.
During that 30 years, Stefanko says Rosebud has agreed to build a trust fund so the state has money to maintain the treatment plant once Rosebud relinquishes ownership. Melissa Reckner of the Kiski-Conemaugh Stream Team had her supporters write the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in support of the plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? I mean, how often do you have a private company willing to pony up that amount of money to treat these problems that are legacy problems that they really have no, I don't know the right word, like they're not responsible for those discharges.
Reckner says Topper Run, also known as the St. Michael's Discharge, is known as one of the Super Seven because it's one of the seven major mine discharges in the Kiski-Conemaugh watershed.
And just by treating the Topper Run or St. Michael Discharge, that is removing anywhere between 30 and 40% of the pollution loading to the Little Conemaugh.
And by cleaning the Little Conemaugh, Reckner says it will help the Kiski and the Allegheny Rivers as the water moves downstream into Pittsburgh. The project got state and federal approval late last year. The DEP's John Stefanko stands above the newly built water treatment plant. Stefanko says it's a success story.
Yeah. It's a water treatment plant.
Yeah.
But it is one of the largest in Pennsylvania, if not the largest in Pennsylvania, of this type of treatment system.
To access the coal reserves, Rosebud needs to pump less than 5,000 gallons of water per minute out of the mine. But the company agreed to pump and treat twice that to help with water cleanup efforts. Within weeks of the plant beginning operations last summer, the Little Conemaugh River went from orange to nearly clear. Melissa Reckner says she heard people talking about it while attending the popular Flood City Music Festival.
Just hearing that, I went down through Johnstown and, you know, of course, my heart soared because I'm like, oh my God, look at this. It looks fantastic.
Reckner's not alone. John Stefanko remembers the orange waters of his own youth as he looks at the clear running stream.
It also makes you feel like, wow, I helped make this happen. I was a small piece of a lot of other people that did it. But to think I had a part in this just kind of makes it, you know, tingly, and it makes it, wow, you know, it makes you show that anybody can make a definite impact in improving your environment.
Stefanko says now that the Rosebud deal is in place, other mining companies are stepping forward. They also want to mine deeper into coal reserves while helping to reduce the legacy of acid mine drainage. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Support for these stories came from the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. The Allegheny Front is produced in Pittsburgh and reports on Pennsylvania's environment. More at AlleghenyFront.org. Natural gas is projected to surpass coal as the dominant source of U.S. electric power generation in the coming decades. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Kusick has more on a new federal report.
By 2040, natural gas will account for 35% of total electric generation, while coal will supply 32%. The forecast comes from the Federal Energy Information Administration's annual Energy Outlook. EIA Administrator Adam Zeminski says the prices of natural gas are expected to keep going up, first due to increased use in industrial and power sectors, then later due to growing exports of liquefied natural gas.
The production numbers continue to grow, even with consumption growing, allowing for the ability to have net exports.
Pennsylvania's at the center of this changing energy landscape. According to recent EIA estimates, the Marcellus Shale is expected to provide 18% of all U.S. gas production this month. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
This is Inside Appalachia. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Cecilia Mason. The fifth induction ceremony into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame recently took place in Charleston, featuring a wide breadth of styles of music and talent. West Virginia Public Radio's Glynis Board attended the event, spoke with some of the inductees, and compiled this musical montage.
Hello, friends. I'm Melvin Goins, and I'm coming home to the state where I was born and raised, in West Virginia. And I think this is one of the greatest thrills of my life, getting to go in the Hall of Fame tonight. After 60 long years, just exactly yesterday, I left West Virginia 60 years and come to Pikeville, Kentucky. And yesterday, 60 years, I come back home to West Virginia. Oh, how I love the sound of the wind when it's howling. Oh, it blows the blues away. Makes me forget the girl that I'm loving. Let me forget until another day. Oh, I'd like to be at Bottom of the Mountain. Banjo and a fiddle was a band back in those days. There wasn't no guitars. So all of my people came from old-time mountain music. They was all good fiddle players and good banjo pickers and good dancers. So I guess a little bit of it rubbed off on me. When I got in this business, I never thought I would stay in it. But I had to leave West Virginia at that time because the money was thin. I was making $12 a week to live off of, $6 for rent, $1 a day to eat off of. So this job came along about $80, $90 a week in Kentucky, so I didn't have any choice. Be like Hank Snow, just move on. I thought I left the United States when I left West Virginia to come to Kentucky. But I tell you, both states has been great to me, and I'm proud of my hometown state, West Virginia. I think it's a great state, great people, great musicians. Can't beat it with a stick.
Well, the treetops scrape the sky. Then I would forget all my worries and my trouble. I'll just let the wind blow them by.
Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. And she's sorry to be delayed. But last evening down in Lover's Lane, she strayed. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. When she woke up and found that her dreams of love had gone, Madam, she ran to the man who had led her so far astray. And from under her velvet gown, she drew a gun and shot her lover down. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. When the mob came and got her and dragged her from the jail, Madam, they strung her up on the old willow across the way. And the moment before she died, she lifted up her lovely head and cried, Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today.
You're in for a real treat right now. Get ready for this. Accompanied by Ron Neal, here to sing two selections from Eleanor Stieber's repertoire, is an Alum Creek native and a fabulous singer, Betsy Bear.
Each induction ceremony, the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame presents a spirit award to an individual who we feel embodies the unique spirit of West Virginia. This year's recipient is Landau Eugene Murphy Jr. Landau has broken down all manners of stereotypes. Of course, when he sings Sinatra, people are slack-jawed. But beyond that, his grace's genteel manner disarms the most serious skeptics. But just as important as the trajectory of his career is what Landau has given back to West Virginia. He has chosen to make his home in Logan. In addition to performing countless benefits and fundraisers and giving his all every time, he continues to be an inspiration and role model for many, many young people, especially in southern West Virginia.
So deep in my heart, it's like you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I'd say to myself.
West Virginia is a place that I love. I was born and raised in Holden, West Virginia, in Logan County. As a kid, my parents split up and moved me to Detroit. You know, my mom moved me to Detroit, and it was just a total different lifestyle. It's a big culture shock for me. And I always, you know, wanted to come back home, but, you know, my mom wanted to stay there. And I always just dreamed of being back in West Virginia every day. And so when I got that opportunity as a grown man, I made sure I moved back home. And, you know, God blessed me with the opportunity to go on America's Got Talent and, you know, share my talent with the rest of the world. And I was blessed to be able to do that. And so once I got that blessing, I decided to use my blessing to spread West Virginia around the world.
Stop before I begin, because I've got you under my skin.
I just want, every day I wake up, I want to make somebody smile. You know, before I go to sleep, I want to make somebody smile. If I got to reach out and tickle you, I want to see you smile. You know, and then that makes me smile. That makes me sleep better. And then when I get up on the stage and do my thing, I want to see you smile. I want to see you having fun. You know, so those values has just been taught to me from West Virginia, and then going to Detroit to a whole different culture, seeing how people treat each other. You know, being to New York, being to Vegas, being to California, I seen it all. So I feel like I seen it all anyway. I seen enough. I should say, I seen enough that convinced me to say I'm gonna be nice to everybody.
Stop just before I begin, because I've got you under my skin, and I like you under my.
No one is as qualified as I to tell you tonight, from my vantage point in his shadow, that what Peter Marshall does, everything he does, singing and hosting and acting, everything he does, my friends, is not easy. It's difficult, which is why he is now entering the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame. Peter Marshall.
It's a song called This Is All I Ask. It was written by the great Gordon Jenkins, and he wrote it for me in 1958, the year my Jamie was born. I was 32 in those days, and the song didn't mean much to me. Now that I'm 87, and for all you guys 60 and over, this could be your song. Beautiful girl, walk a little slower when you walk by me. Lingering sunset, stay a little longer with the lonely sea. Children everywhere, when you shoot at bad men, shoot at me. Take me to that strange enchanted land. Grown-ups never understand. Wandering rainbow, leave a little color.
He's just an amazing musician and someone that West Virginia can be very proud of. It is my pleasure to induct into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame, my buddy, Wayne Moss.
My mother asked me, starting about 12 years of age, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. I'm a kid. Give me a break. And she said, okay, we'll wait till you're 13, and then you'll tell me. So anyway, at 15, she got an interview with Chet Atkins and kind of pushed me down his throat. And he said, yeah, he's okay. You know, maybe you can get a job down to opera or something. She said, look, music's all he knows. What do you suggest he do? And at that point, he was getting a little perturbed. He said, lady, I don't know. He looks like he'd make a good plumber. I've got to go.
You got the only daddy that'll walk the line.
Okay, Chet ended up hiring me. He's got six of my songs. And hired me for most of the RCA acts that he had anything to do with. And so that kind of felt good. If somebody tells you to be a plumber, just ignore it.
Listen to me, brother, there's something you should know. You come in this world with nothing, Lord, and that's the way you go. Just read the words of Jesus that are written down in red in the books of Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Do like the good book said. Don't worry about nothing.
No, nothing.
Pray about everything.
When I'm writing a song, of course I work on that, but the rest of the time I just sit around and play gospel songs on acoustic, because the Lord gave me the talent, and I'm doing a gospel song upstairs.
Jesus said, Peter, step out of that boat. You can walk on water, son, so your faith will make you float.
That's giving credit where credit's due, I guess.
He would still be driving. Don't worry about nothing.
No, nothing.
Pray about everything. Stop all that fussing.
No fussing.
Leave it to the King. Don't worry about nothing.
No, nothing.
Pray about everything. Pray about everything. Don't worry about nothing.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, to perform for you is the newest inductee into the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame, Tim O'Brien.
Thank you, Kevin.
I wanted to do something that was mountain music and something that was Irish music. Mountain music somewhat is Irish music, you know. A lot of the music comes from the Celtic world, and it kind of stood still here longer. And then you've got the, you know, playing it on the banjo, which is the African instrument. So I'm just pointing out that, you know, the music that we love and we consider traditional evolved here from earlier forms and recombined. Just like, you know, when you end up with a rock and roll song, you've got some bluegrass elements and some, you know, jazz or whatever, all these different things coming together, and a new sound is always coming from somewhere else and recombining it.
For the loss of my country, as we stray there on Ireland's green shore. The cheeks were like,
if you only knew him as a singer, you'd be in awe of his talent. If you only knew him as a multi-instrumentalist, you'd be floored. If you only knew him as a songwriter, you'd say he was a monster talent. If you knew him as a music historian, you'd be impressed. But Tim is all of these things rolled into one person. And sometimes I think it's easy to take this man for granted because he wears it all so loosely.
One evening for pleasure I ramble by the banks of a cool purling stream. I sat down on a bed of primroses and I gently fell into a dream.
here to perform some of the Swan Silvertone's most popular gospel songs, please welcome Curtis and Friendly Womack with the Reverend R.L. Bush.
Come on, y'all, do this for me. Come on. Everybody. Come on, everybody, everybody. Clap your hands. Listen. All night, all day, the angels watching over me, my Lord. All night, all day, the angels watching over me. Listen. All night.
My name is Friendly Womack. I was named after my father, and we're accepting an award for a cousin by the name of Solomon Womack that was with the Swan Silvertone Singers.
The angels watching over me.
My name is Curtis Womack. Glad to be here, have this reunion with my brother, and with the people of Charleston, where I was born originally, saw the first light of day.
Telling me there's work to do. I took my master's hand, oh, in our joy, that heavenly band, singing all night.
All night, all day, the angels watching over me.
This is such a joy to make music. It's a blessing because it's not everyone that can do it, vocally or with an instrument. So when you can do that vocally and do it with an instrument, you can communicate.
Some people had a gift of going beyond that. It is not how good they sing, but they have. And we heard it, they used to call it soul. The first time I heard that word was Solomon. I ain't bragging, he said I had a lot of soul. He says, yeah, so, in other words, you make them want to cry.
Master's hand, oh yeah, I join that Christian band, singing all night,
all night.
It is not just directed toward one race of people.
Right.
Okay. Everybody can have soul, and it's just a feeling that you can relate and give to other people.
Yeah, you know it's right away.
One more time,
this is Inside Appalachia. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Cecilia Mason. Some of the most resilient land in the eastern United States is in the Potomac Headwaters region of West Virginia, and progress was made this past week by the Kakapin and Lost Rivers Land Trust in protecting about 900 acres of that land from future development. Snow crunches underfoot as Jim Baker gives a mid-December tour of about 170 acres his hunting club just acquired. The property sits along West Virginia's Morgan-Hampshire County line in the shadow of Kakapin Mountain, bordering Kakapin State Park.
Well, basically some rolling hills at the lower elevations before you see the larger Kakapin Mountain in the background. Just the very top of it up there, but it gives you an idea of the what I call diversity and topography that you see around here with the with ridges coming off a 90 degree angle from the mountain, and you know, streams with valleys and so on. It's just a lot more broken than you sometimes see with, basically, when you just go straight up a mountain. It just gets steeper as you go up with various benches, where here you have ridges coming off the mountain with ravines in between them. It just makes a lot more unique setting topography-wise.
This diversity in landscape is one of the factors that makes this property resilient. David Ray is a Southern Field Coordinator for the Open Space Institute, a New York State land trust devoted to preserving land across the eastern United States. The Institute created a $6 million fund with a goal of protecting some of the most resilient land in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic region. Four areas are targeted: southern New Hampshire and Maine forests, the Highlands and Kittatinny Ridge on the New Jersey-Pennsylvania border, the Middle Connecticut River, and the Potomac Headwaters region of West Virginia and Virginia.
A good way to think about it is sort of like actors on a stage. And you may have a stage or a theater where the play is going to change over time. The actors will come and go, but you have that stage, and it's a place where things happen. And so the idea behind this analysis is we're not just going to focus on the actors, which are the plants and animals. We're going to focus on trying to find the very best stages that will persist and endure into the future.
Ray says this property is a worthy part of the Potomac Headwaters stage because it meets the criteria of being resilient that include variety in the landscape, having the right kind of soil, and the connection to other unbroken land, in this case about 6,000 acres of Kekapin State Park.
Why would you say it's important to protect the most resilient land?
Well, we have choices we have to make with the limited funding that's available for conservation. And we know that conditions are going to change that are really important to whether or not plants and animals survive into the future. So by protecting the land areas that are going to be more enduring, that are going to provide more options to those plants and animals as they try to adapt to those changes, we're going to protect as much of the broad range of biodiversity that we have as possible.
And Ray points out protecting these highly resilient areas also benefits humans.
The sort of side benefits to that kind of work includes things like maintaining the quality of water that goes into our drinking water sources, preventing flooding from occurring, and recreational opportunities and similar type things. So there's lots of benefits to humans that come along with trying to protect biodiversity.
The Open Space Institute gave the Kekapin and Lost River Land Trust a $210,000 grant to help acquire an easement that will prevent the property from being developed in the future. Land Trust Executive Director Nancy Ailes says her organization raised matching money that included about $60,000 and an easement donation from the hunting club.
We always like to hug our landowners. You know, if it isn't for them and their willingness to do this and desire to protect their land, none of us would be here at the table today.
Jim Baker says it's comforting to know that this rugged piece of property that he and other shareholders have come to love since the hunting club was founded in 1962 will remain untouched.
Well, you become attached to it over time after hunting on it, walking on it, maintaining it, seeing it, you know, through all the seasons, and knowing that it's yours. You certainly get attached to it, and you, for some of us anyway, we want to see that piece of property as it is, so that we can, you know, at night we can think, you know, that's the way it's going to be forever.
The Open Space Institute's work protecting resilient landscapes is supported by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Season's Greetings. We're hearing and conveying those wishes daily now. Here, West Virginia actress, playwright, and historian Karen Varanch of Beckley with her thoughts on Merry Xmas.
Merry Xmas. How many times do you see that during the holidays? And every time it appears, I hear someone complain we should not take the Christ out of Christmas. But putting an X in the place of Christ is not sacrilegious at all. In fact, it's an ancient and sacred way to honor both Christ and the early Christian martyrs. In first century Rome, Christians were persecuted. If it was revealed they were a Christian, they were arrested and forced to star in a new form of theatrical entertainment, thrown into an arena with the lions, with the audience roaring as they were killed. It was illegal to be a Christian and to worship in any way. But those early Christians were a determined people. They held secret worship services deep in the catacombs, underground burial sites. They would mark the outside of the catacomb with an X. X is the Greek letter chi, and the first letter in writing the name of Christ. First century Rome was strongly influenced by Greek culture and learning, and the Greek alphabet was common. Furthermore, there was another nuance. Not only did the X stand for the first letter of Christ's name, if you tipped it on its side, it becomes a cross. So X marked the place of secret worship. Yes, X did mark the spot. I had a chance to visit one of those ancient catacombs when my sister and I toured the country of Malta in the Mediterranean. The guide led us down narrow corridors hewn from jagged rock. The stone floors were uneven and rough. On either side there were open shelves with exposed ancient skeletons. Deep in this underground maze, we came to an early altar. It had been fashioned out of stone in the first century. Since it was protected from light and air, you could still see the remnants of deep red and blue paint. Benches were also carved out of the stone so that about a dozen people could sit. We each held a flashlight, but I could imagine the magic and mystery evoked when these early Christians met by candlelight to worship their Lord in spite of danger and persecution. It was an inspiring experience. Those people risked their lives to follow their faith. I ask myself, if I lived in those times, would I have been so brave? I like to think that I would, but how can I know? We become complacent in the comparative ease of the 21st century. We don't speak out against injustice or hatred. We don't passionately support a cause or a belief. It's too easy to look away when someone else is in pain. And so, in this season of long nights, we have the opportunity to look for our own light, to follow the path of our own maze, however jagged or rough. Throughout time, every culture and every religion has found this season of darkness to be a time to hope for the light. I wish for each of you the chance to find your own light. Merry Xmas.
That's actress, playwright, and historian Karen Varanch of Beckley. This is Inside Appalachia. You're Inside Appalachia. I'm Cecilia Mason. West Virginia writer Jean Mosier has found success with her book, Way Out in West Virginia. The popular travel guide highlights some of the state's odd or off-the-beaten-path attractions that travelers might like to see. And now Way Out has gone mobile.
This is the fourth edition, so we've expanded it. The full title is Way Out in West Virginia, a must-have guide to the wonders and oddities of the Mountain State. And I have to say, it was really nice writing a book that everybody loves. Nobody criticizes it. In 15 years and 50,000 plus copies, I've never gotten a negative word. I've barely even gotten people to say, oh, well, you got this wrong. It was very well researched. In each edition, we've expanded it. We've put in more pictures. Of course, we've updated it. So what we did with this fourth edition is that we're making it an ebook, and we'll make it available so that people can load it on their devices, their phones, their Kindles, their iPads, so they can be traveling around the state and just link right into the website for something they've read about in the book. And I think Way Out, because of the kind of book it is made for what an ebook can do, which is allow you to explore the content of the book very easily and very quickly.
Give a scenario of how you see the ebook being used as someone travels around the state.
The way we set up Way Out was not as a traditional guidebook. It isn't like, oh, you come to Berkeley County and you turn left here and you do. we set it up in chapters, or I set it up in chapters. So there's a chapter on amazing architecture, and there's a chapter on great plumbing, and there's a chapter on remarkable collections. But in the back, we have an index by county. So someone decides they're going to go to the central part of the state, and they're going to go to Pocahontas County, and they're going to go to Randolph County. So they can go to the back of the book, and they can see all the things that are in Randolph County. They'll be able to click to the direct link, either to the Convention and Visitors Bureau, which would have a lot of information, or they can decide that in Randolph County, they really want to know about the Augusta Heritage Festival. And that's listed, and they click through to that, and they find out what those dates are. Or they can be driving down the road and say, okay, here we are. We're almost in Randolph County. Where are we going to go to eat tonight? And they look under Randolph County, or they go to the local food chapter, and they find someplace that's right there.
Digitizing it sounds like it's going to make it way more usable.
I think so. Now, that doesn't mean that people won't get hard copies, too. And I find that very interesting, that certainly with Senate Magic, people want the book. With Way Out, I would be inclined to say that there will be more people who would just want an ebook, which is fine with me.
What is new in Way Out in West Virginia in this edition? Is there anything new you'd like to highlight or mention?
There are a lot of changes at the Greenbrier. I think the last edition came out in maybe 97. So it was right before Jim Justice bought the Greenbrier and did a lot of changes. So we had to do a lot of changes in that. A lot more photographs. If there's a trip that people haven't done yet, the Ohio border with West Virginia down the Ohio River is just the greatest drive. And you do it on the West Virginia side on Route 2, and you can start from the world's largest teapot right outside Weirton, and you can drive down and you get to see all the weird stuff in Wheeling, and there's plenty great food in Wheeling. And then you go to Moundsville, which is really weird central, and the Mound. And then you get to go to New Martinsville, which has my favorite restaurant in the state of West Virginia, which is Quinette's Courthouse Restaurant, where they have a daily buffet that has, you can get for like $10 for the dinner. Everything on this 75-item buffet is that made that day in-house. It's delicious. 7 different kinds of pies, and they fine you $1 if you don't clean your plate. So we had a great time. Then you're down through Parkersburg and then get to Point Pleasant. Fabulous place. Learn all about Mothman. And then on your way to Huntington, which is such a stunning city in the state, you get to go to Hillbilly Hot Dog. And that was one of the big things I wanted to make sure was in this new edition. So we go to Hillbilly Hot Dog, and they have a song. They have a song that they've created for Hillbilly Hot Dog that the girls sing every time somebody orders one of the hot dogs. So Jack and I go in, and we're sitting there, you know, waiting for somebody to sing the song, and the girls sing the song. And there's this young couple in a booth next to us, and we started talking to them, because, of course, I always grill these people. And they said, oh, yes, we work for Disney in Los Angeles, and this is one of our favorite songs that we click into their website, and we sing it in the office. And we were coming to Lexington, Kentucky, so we decided we were close enough that we were going to drive to Hillbilly Hot Dog. I'm like, good grief, people. So that was great. Then you go on to Huntington, which actually is Hot Dog Central in West Virginia. There's all kinds of great hot dog places, plus Heiner's Bakery, where they make the buns there. And Huntington also has remarkable museums in the city of Huntington. So there it is. That's a wonderful week-long trip to go from the tip of the northern panhandle down to the furthest western spot in the state, all along the Ohio River. So you get to see the Ohio, which is a fabulous river. We own the Ohio River. Maryland owns the Potomac, but we got the Ohio. And all the coal barges and the locks and the dams on it. It's a great trip.
Well, Jeannie Mosier, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you, Cecilia.
We had help producing Inside Appalachia this week from Morehead State Public Radio in Morehead, Kentucky, WMMT in Whitesburg, Kentucky, WEKU in Richmond, Kentucky, WETS in Johnson City, Tennessee, Allegheny Mountain Radio in Dunmore, West Virginia, the Allegheny Front, and Kentucky Public Radio. Our opening theme music is by Michael Lipton. Our closing theme music is by Al Petaway and Amy White from their CD, Land of the Sky, from Maggie's Music. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. You can also address your letters to Inside Appalachia, in care of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, 600 Capitol Street, Charleston, West Virginia, 25301. The Inside Appalachia podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at our website, wvpublic.org. I'm Cecilia Mason. Inside Appalachia is a news and public affairs production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.